Economists and social scientists have identified general attitudes that characterize progressive societies and specific values that help shape constructive systems of education within them. These attitudes stimulate gender equality by greatly influencing patterns of development in any given society. The core values on which they are based provide a barometer by which to measure the progress of that development, as will be explored next. Knowledge. First and foremost among these signs of progress is a society's basic attitude towards education. Knowledge, to paraphrase David Landes, makes almost all the difference to development, and education, training, and skill acquisition are key drivers of competitiveness. As the global economy becomes more complex, it is essential to boost the human capital endowment of the labor force. And in order to maintain a competitive edge in global markets, therefore, people need access to new knowledge. They must have the opportunity to learn how to operate the latest technologies and need to be retrained in these new processes. The experience of Finland, Korea, Taiwan, and Israel clearly proves that emphasis on education has been particularly important in the areas of technological innovation. Conversely, lack of such basic skills, which have become the contemporary form of literacy, severely limits the participation of citizens in development. When education is not considered an asset in society and its importance is undermined by inadequate budgets, by risible salaries, and by lack of funding, poor incentives, and inadequate qualifications, a society is effectively on a slippery slope as far as its own future prosperity is concerned. But whatever coverage of primary education has expanded rapidly, as it has done in the developing world, higher education has gained corresponding importance. Thus, countries that have invested heavily in creating a well-developed infrastructure for tertiary education have reaped enormous benefits in terms of growth. But for people to be gainfully employed, well-informed regarding government policies, good judges of politicians, and impervious to demagogic manipulation, they need levels of education that go far deeper and reach much further than technological expertise. The degree of conscious awareness may not be to the short-term benefit of those who hold the reins of power, but it is vital for the longer-term development and security of their societies. It may be salutary to remember in this regard that the teaching profession, like the other service industries referred to in Chapter 3, is invariably dominated by women. There was a time when education was considered a vocation and respected. Today, when there are more female teachers than male ones, teachers the world over are generally undervalued, poorly paid, and overworked. If education is not given the importance it deserves, if the teaching profession is not better validated in financial terms, not only the millions of women who teach, but the billions of children they teach, and therefore society as a whole, will suffer. Time. Our attitude toward time also has a significant influence on developmental patterns in society. Time management and a systematic approach towards work, for example, are crucial for economic progress. In this regard, Landes characterizes the invention of the mechanical clock as, quote, the greatest achievement of medieval mechanical ingenuity, unquote, both for its revolutionary conception and equally important for how it permitted the ordering of life in the cities in ways that had a major impact on productivity. Indeed, the very notion of productivity is a byproduct of the clock. Once one can relate performance to uniform time units, work is never the same, is how Landes puts it. The invention of the mechanical clock led to one of Adam Smith's seminal insights: wealth and prosperity depend directly, to use Smith's language, on the, quote, productive powers of labor, unquote. But we have suffered from myopia in ordering time in the past. Work can become an important organizing principle of life and productivity, an engine of prosperity in the future only if the mechanical clock respects the rhythms of female as well as male biology. One of the negative aspects of the Industrial Revolution was that it set the clock ticking to suit only half the human race. If women are to join the labor force effectively, if they are to play their part in enhancing productivity, the clock has to be adjusted to allow for pregnancy, for parental leave, and for childcare, and it must respect the return to the workforce of women who have chosen to stay out of it during their childbearing years. The fact that this has already been achieved in several countries, such as Finland, for example, proves that if policymakers look forward rather than back at all models of ordering time, huge strides can be made in society. Temporal orientation and whether a particular culture is forward-looking or unduly focused on the past also make big differences to its prosperity. It has been found to be much more helpful to an economy, for example, to confront challenges by asking, how can we set this right? Rather than by reacting with the statement, who did this to us? Home Minister Okubo Toshimishi in 1870s Japan opted for the future. He believed that instead of undertaking punitive military expeditions and adventures in neighboring countries, a better way to engage the creative energies of the Japanese people was through the acquisition of technological know-how and the emulation of best practices from the developed world. This choice led to a century of rapid economic growth and a steady convergence to rich country standards of living. Interestingly enough, temporal orientation also has consequences for the way gender roles are perceived. A conservative society that leans towards all customs and traditions is invariably going to fall back into entrenched habits of patriarchal power, as seen in Chapter 4. The psychology of blame, moreover, which prefers the default reaction of who did this to us, rather than the proactive use of how can we set this right, is much more inclined to the misogynist attitudes which blame women for centuries for the sins of the world. One of the greatest challenges facing those who try to rectify and calibrate the injustices of the past is to avoid falling into the same backward-looking patterns of victimization and accusation today. Ethics. The often unspoken code of ethics and moral values underpinning a society are likewise among the barometers of change characterizing a progressive system of education within it. Amartya Sen reminds us that Adam Smith, quote, talked about the important role of broader values for the choice of behavior, as well as the importance of institutions, unquote, in The Wealth of Nations. But, Sen adds, it was in his first book, The Theory of Moral Sentiments, published some 250 years ago, that Smith extensively investigated the powerful role of non-profit values. While Smith stated that prudence was of all virtues that which is most helpful to the individual, he went on to argue that, quote, humanity, justice, generosity, and public spirit are the qualities most useful to others, unquote. Harvard professor Benjamin Friedman corroborates this point by arguing that economic growth not only relies upon moral impetus, it also has positive moral consequences, as the predominant tendency is for economic growth to render a society more inclined towards openness, tolerance, mobility, and democracy. A related value closely associated with ethical standards and their absence concerns the criteria of advancement used by societies. Do such criteria operate through meritocratic systems where rewards are linked to excellence of performance in any given field of labor, law, or government? Or, as previously mentioned in Chapter 4, do they depend on factors such as friendship, ethnic kinship, family connections, or party affiliation, where corruption can easily abound? Productivity is invariably enhanced when resources are allocated according to efficiency, rather than to subjective considerations unrelated to performance. A paper by Bertrand and Shore, shows that those countries in which kinship ties and family loyalty prevail, quote, have lower levels of per capita GDP, smaller firms, a higher fraction of self-employed, fewer publicly traded firms, and a smaller fraction of total market value controlled by families on average, unquote. These tribal criteria of advancement, if they could be so delineated without offense, have been notoriously unjust towards anyone who does not have the right connections, who does not belong to the right caste or club, who is peripheral to the centers of power. In such countries, a tiny minority of women may be the beneficiaries of various forms of nepotism, but the vast majority are penalized and society as a whole suffers. Trust. The common thread linking ethics, time management, and education together is trust. The role of trust as a barometer of progress in economic and financial development has received increased attention in the recent academic literature. It is a concept that has a significant impact on prosperity in terms of both its depth and its breadth. The levels of trust reach depending on the largeness of its circle. It also serves as a barometer of whether women are in or out of that circle. From the point of view of economic theory, trust can be defined as the degree of probability that an individual assigns to any specific event. One example is a business partner's compliance with the contract terms. Another is an employer's adherence to an agreed rate of pay. And a third could be a government's decision to invest in the education of girls. All such transactions depend on probability outcomes, and as empirical evidence abundantly demonstrates, trust is always accompanied by risk. It is also affected by a wide range of cultural influences, such as religion, ancestral origin, and ethnic roots. Although the impact of inherited culture is attenuated for individuals with higher levels of education, these deep-seated influences still exist and play an important role in who and how we do or do not trust. The survey Eurobarometer questions the bilateral trust between individuals from different countries, for example, and asks how much the Swedes trust other Swedes, or Germans, or Italians. The answers reveal that this trust is affected not only by historical and linguistic features, such as the number of years countries have been at war between 1000 and 1970, or the commonality of linguistic roots, but also by the genetic distance between two populations. Economic literature has further proved that people who are more positively inclined and more willing to trust are also more likely to become entrepreneurs. It is clear, therefore, that the level of trust between two countries affects the level of trade, of foreign investment, and of portfolio investment between them. The radius of identification in a society, and in particular whether the circle of trust is narrow or wide, is also likely to make a difference to the economy. It is noteworthy that the fast pace of growth in India and China over the past several decades has coincided with an opening up of their economies to international trade, foreign investment, and the rigors of international competition. India spent the first four decades after its 1947 independence mired in poverty and lack of opportunity, largely isolated from the global economy. Similarly, during the Ming Dynasty in China, 1368 to 1644, the country turned inward. Trade with the outside world collapsed, and the economy came to a standstill. China fell rapidly behind Europe at this time, which, by contrast, had set a course of vigorous development, having discovered the New World with its resulting commercial advantages. If our primary identification is with the family or the tribe, there may be problems in fruitfully engaging with the rest of the world. And by the same token, if we exclude women from the club by denying girls education, there are immediate consequences for society. Trust thrives on inclusion. Gender. The most important barometer for progress, and the one that most dramatically helps to shape constructive systems of education concerns gender, in other words, the way in which women are included in society. As we have argued throughout this book, there is a close connection between national economic performance and the degree to which societies have succeeded in integrating women into the economy. There is a vital link between financial prosperity in any particular society and whether women have been allowed to participate in decision-making, particularly in the case of representation in parliaments, cabinets, and other executive bodies. But such progress and prosperity depend entirely on whether the attitude that characterizes any particular society makes it possible for a woman to avail herself of education and has the opportunity to build up her human capital. International competitiveness and productivity have much to do with the efficient allocation of resources, including, of course, human resources. The efficient operation of our increasingly knowledge-based economy is not only a function of adequate levels of available finance and a reasonably open trade regime for goods and services. More and more, it is dependent on our ability to tap into a society's reservoir of talents and skills. And that depends on whether women, as well as men, girls as well as boys, have equal access to quality education at all levels. When, because of tradition or a misunderstanding of the purpose of religion, social taboos or blind prejudices, half of the world's population is prevented from making its contribution to the life of a nation by being deprived of education, the economy will suffer. The skills that the private sector can tap will be necessarily narrower and shallower, and productivity, the engine of sustainable growth, will be impaired. It is indeed no surprise that the most competitive countries in the world, those that have been better able to operate on the boundaries of the technology frontier, are also those where women have been given the greatest opportunities to be equal partners with men. When corporate boards or other groups of people appointed to formulate policies, design programs, or undertake some other specific tasks are all male-dominated, the decisions arrived at will tend to be suboptimal because they will inevitably reflect the priorities and biases of men who have a particular way of looking at the world and analyzing its problems. Thus, gender equality does not have purely an ethical or moral dimension, but is, in fact, an issue of economic efficiency, an educational opportunity, and thus is fundamental to the creation of a more prosperous, more informed, and more educated world. Education and the acquisition of knowledge and skills are desirable development objectives everywhere, in all countries, and under all conditions. But traditions and social norms will certainly affect a sociodemographic group's capacity to aspire. Cultural norms naturally affect women's ability to improve themselves and ultimately to contribute to the economy. Within the limits allowed by availability of data of this nature, economic literature shows that women's participation in economic activities is profoundly affected by culture. For example, cultural heritage affects living arrangements and women's labor force participation. Fertility rates are affected by those prevailing in the country of origins of women's ancestors. The World Bank's 2016 Women, Business and the Law data and report also show the close connection between the law and restrictions embedded in the law that can impose various limitations on women's agency in 173 countries, including labor force participation, ownership of firms, and access to the financial system. All these factors impinge on the quality and accessibility of education. This reality is true not only for women, but also for minority groups. Several studies, however, have shown that the performance on standardized tests becomes worse when participants are told that the tests are targeted to minority groups or when they are asked to disclose their membership in such groups. So, whatever efforts are made to enhance educational opportunities and level the playing field for girls to participate in society, this should in no way target a particular cultural bias or be directed at a particular religious tradition or linked to one set of values, Western or otherwise. Education is vital in many different regions of the world. It is relevant to all contemporary societies and cultures. It is urgently needed as much in northern China as it is in Siberia, in central London, or in the Bolivian Andes. The progress of society and technology in years to come is only likely to make the universality of this need even more apparent. These core values related to gender, trust and ethics, time and knowledge, affect all societies and are the direct consequences of globalization. They are a fundamental proof of the gradual emergence of a common language across national and cultural frontiers. They are a universal barometer by which to measure the progress of development in society, and they provide the key criteria that are accepted internationally as the foundations for economic development. Of course, societies will differ in the ways and the extent to which they have internalized some of these values in their policies, their traditions, and their institutions. Acceptance of gender equality, for instance, as a critical element of a progressive development strategy, does not mean that inequalities and injustice based on gender will suddenly disappear. Desirability of trust and a common foundation of ethics necessary for inclusive models of prosperity does not imply that utopia is around the corner. But few would disagree with the thesis that gender disparities are out of step with modernity and that their presence retards human progress. Development is not only about reducing poverty and expanding opportunities against the background of rising incomes. It is also about adopting a set of values that are compatible with humanity's moral development and that can only be encouraged through education.